Hello, my name is Kevin Keith. I'm honored to have a chance to contribute to this podcast, and today I'd like to take a look at the role of mental health in gun control politics in the U.S. as an example of using the tools of skepticism to explore a public policy issue. This podcast is being recorded less than 2 weeks after the horrendous mass shootings at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. That event triggered an ongoing public discussion of the role of guns in American culture and of possible ways to reduce or prevent gun violence in the future. Much of that debate is ripe for skeptical analysis. Here, though, I want to focus on just one aspect of this situation, one that has gotten particular attention after the Sandy Hook tragedy. Many defenders of gun rights have argued that a major contributing factor to gun violence is mental illness, that the problem is not that there are too many guns or that guns are too easily available, but that one specific category of citizens, those with mental illnesses, represent the most significant source of danger. Wayne LaPierre, vice president of the NRA, started this discussion in a speech a week after the shooting in which he said, quote, "Our society is populated by an unknown number of genuine monsters. People so deranged, so evil, so possessed by voices and driven by demons that no sane person can possibly ever comprehend them. How can we possibly even guess how many, given our nation's refusal to create an active national database of the mentally ill?" End quote. How would skeptics typically analyze an argument of this kind? The focus of classical skeptical critique is twofold: factual assertions and the logical conclusions drawn from them. But the analysis can and should go deeper than that. This podcast will address how and why. We can start with the basic factual and logical analysis. First, what are the factual claims embedded in this argument? Second, what policies are based on those claims of fact? Third, are those policies logically coherent, and are they logically related to the facts which are claimed to support them? LaPierre asserts that our society is populated by people whom he describes in pejorative terms, monsters, evil, but to whom he also applies terms referring to mental health. He calls them deranged and compares them to the sane. Thus, the claim is that there are significant numbers of such people, the mentally ill, in society, and that fact is relevant to the issue of gun violence. His call for a national database is both a policy prescription and a logical link between tracking or controlling the mentally ill and the question of gun policy. Though he doesn't say it explicitly, his clear implication is that monitoring the mentally ill for the obvious purpose of restricting the gun rights of those people, but not the ones he calls sane, is the appropriate response to the issue of gun violence. This carries the further unstated but again obvious factual implication that restricting the gun rights of the mentally ill will in fact reduce gun violence overall. So, in this argument, we see there are three explicit or at least unmistakable factual claims. The number of mentally ill people in America is large, their existence creates a danger of gun violence, and monitoring and regulating their access to guns will be a significant step in reducing gun violence. Based on these fact claims is a policy prescription that we should institute monitoring programs, specifically, quote, an active national database of the mentally ill, end quote, and, by extrapolation, use such programs to prevent access to guns by person listed in that database. From here, it would seem that the obvious step in analyzing the argument is to do some research to determine whether its factual claims are true. Are mentally ill people really a factor in gun violence? Are they unusually prone to such violence? Would restricting their legal rights to guns make a difference in shooting incidents? And so forth. Given a fuller and validated set of facts, we can then begin logical analysis to see if those facts support the proposed policy, taking into account relevant laws and social values as well. This form of analysis is a classic application of skeptical thinking. In fact, I'm sure you're all familiar with it. But before starting down that road, let's take a closer look at the argument we're analyzing. The facts and conclusions it relies on seem simple enough, but there's more to be said. First, though the argument focuses on the so-called mentally ill, it does not define that term. We may think we know what it means, but it covers a very large group of people. Mental illness, like physical illness, comes in many forms and can be mild or severe. Also, what is the reason for this focus on the mentally ill, as opposed, say, to people who own guns, or who have a history of violence, or some other group? For mental illness to be a relevant factor in gun violence, there must logically be some connection between mental illness and violence. There is, in fact, such a connection, in the public mind at least. Mental illness is highly stigmatized, and there are many misconceptions about persons with mental illness, especially regarding their propensity for violence. The actual facts of the matter must be carefully determined to avoid being misled by stereotypes or popular fears. Similarly, we should ask what is meant by a, quote, national database of the mentally ill, end quote. Does that include anyone who has ever been diagnosed with any kind of mental illness? Been treated for a mental illness? Been treated for a serious mental illness? Been treated for a mental illness that resulted in violent behavior? How exactly would having such a database contribute to reduced violence? Would it enable us to place restrictions on the people in the database? All of them, or just certain ones? On what criteria? What restrictions? It turns out that there's more to this argument than appears at first glance. We not only have to discover the truth behind its claims of fact, but also be aware that those factual claims themselves may hide a variety of possible meanings that have to be unpacked as the more fundamental, detailed ground of the argument. We also have to determine exactly what policy is proposed and how it would operate. And, given that the facts, definitions, and policies referred to are so vague, we might ask not only what justification there is for this policy proposal, but also why the proposal was made in the first place. That brings us to some other things we should note about this argument. We have identified the facts and the implied conclusions, and identified gaps in the necessary information about them, but notice something else. The language used to express the argument is unusually loaded and seems to include factually and emotionally distracting terms. LaPierre concludes with a reference to the mentally ill, which is an ordinary medical term, but he first introduced them using language like monsters, deranged, evil, possessed by voices, and driven by demons. He states that, quote, no sane person could possibly comprehend, end quote, the mentally ill. These are inflammatory statements that are most likely factually false or even meaningless, but are clearly intended to induce the hearer to prejudge the people for whom the database, monitoring, and restrictions are then proposed. Now, as skeptics, we're familiar with misleading and emotional appeals, and we know to discount them. In analyzing this argument on factual and logical grounds, we can simply ignore fanciful terms like monsters, evil, or possessed. But that's not enough. The fact that misleading language, as well as broad and vague terminology, undefined terms, and unclear details of policy, are so prominent in this argument, gives us clues to the larger context in which the argument operates. We know already that the general issue addressed by this argument is the focus of a vigorous political controversy in the U.S., and that Wayne LaPierre represents a political group with a particular position on that controversy. The fact that he has a political interest does not invalidate his argument, but we should not overlook the fact of political motivations in understanding this argument fully, especially given the questionable factual content through which it is expressed. Although as skeptics we analyze arguments on factual and logical grounds, some arguments are not intended to influence hearers on those grounds. They may be intended to manipulate hearers with misleading or emotional terminology, or to shift the political grounds of a debate, for instance by introducing irrelevant or contentious issues as a distraction, without regard to facts or logic. Responding only to the strictly factual or logical content of a manipulative appeal of that kind would be a failure, not a success, of the skeptical stance. Some arguments are intended to take advantage of their hearers' naivete by using terms vaguely or dishonestly. A truly skeptical argument analysis requires being awake to the possibility that the argument is not intended to mean what it says at all. Unfortunately, this issue is much too complicated to actually conduct a full study of all the relevant facts and potential policies within the scope of this podcast. What I've hoped to do is use this issue to illustrate some techniques that skeptics can employ in understanding public policy debates in practical terms. Those techniques, of course, include the identification of relevant facts and the analysis of logical arguments, but more is required. We should be aware of the need for clarification of broad factual terms or categories, the possibility that terms are used in narrow or unexpected ways, the significance of hyperbolic language or emotional terms, and the possibility that unstated claims or vague terms are used deliberately to distract or confuse the issue, not clarify it. We should also take the political context of a practical public issue and the political commitments or motivations of the speakers as part of the subject of skeptical critique. As skeptics who value clear, honest, and logical argument grounded on empirical truth, we may too easily credit others with the same motivations and intentions. but arguments can be used to mislead, distract, or create political or emotional momentum, rather than to prove, verify, or persuade, and the ways in which they do so are also grounds for critique. In short, while skeptics often pride themselves on the use of the scientific method or something like it in their analysis of important issues, and regard falsehood, vagueness, and imprecision as forms of error, they should be aware that in the context of practical public debate, those standards and expectations do not always apply. Analysis of arguments on practical issues should be centered on facts and logic as the most sure tools for finding truth, but in the real world, skeptics need more tools in their kit.